To the surprise of many people, King Charles III, in his accession speech, made the following declaration. I, Charles III, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of my other realms and territories, King, Defender of the Faith, do faithfully promise and swear that I shall maintain and preserve the settlement of the true Protestant religion as established by the laws made in Scotland in prosecution of the claim of right, and particularly by an act in Chuld, an act for securing the Protestant religion and Presbyterian church government, and by acts passed in the Parliament of both kingdoms for union of the two kingdoms, together with the government, worship, discipline, rights and privileges of the Church of Scotland. So help me God. As the Queen herself did with such unswerving devotion, I too now solemnly pledge myself, throughout the remaining time God grants me, to uphold the constitutional principles at the heart of our nation. And therefore, wherever you may live, in the United Kingdom, or in the realms or territories across the world, and whatever may be your background or beliefs, I shall endeavour to serve you with loyalty, respect and love, as I have throughout my life. Paul writes to Timothy. First of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers and intercessions and thanksgivings be made for everyone, for kings and all who are in high positions, so that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and dignity. Who do you agree with? The people who say, best keep politics out of the pulpit, religion and politics don't mix, or people like George Washington who said, do not let anyone claim to be a true American if they ever attempt to remove religion from politics. You see, some people love it, some people hate it, but the truth seems to be, you can't keep politics out of religion, and you can't keep religion out of politics. For a start, religious people are involved in politics, and political people are religious. That's just how it is. People of faith, supporting and promoting every party, people from the churches. Whether it's the elders in my last congregation, one who served with distinction as a local councillor for many years, another who is now a member of the Scottish Parliament, or whether you're a cabinet minister like Jacob Rees-Mogg, a devout Roman Catholic. Friends from South Korea were telling me just this week that during the rebuilding of the nation that is South Korea, the role of the churches and of church leaders was absolutely central. Clearly, you can't keep religious people out of politics. Serious political allegiances are made across the stretch of the political spectrum by men and women of faith. Two of the greatest influences on the course of human activity, religion and politics, seem unable to be kept apart. Clearly, Amos didn't want them to be kept apart, and certainly the Bible doesn't want them to be kept apart. Amos is passionate in his calls for justice, for the people to show kindness and mercy, for oppression to end, and the weak, widows, orphans, vulnerable foreigners who live among the people to be cared for. Anyone in need, they are to be the focus of our religious endeavour. If our religion leaves them untouched in their plight and fragility, then it's a religion that has lost direction, missed the point. A religion that contents itself with abstract thought and forgets about the people we are called to care for and serve is not a biblical religion. If it's only about sound theology and good liturgy and correct church government, and not about clothing the naked, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, defending the weak, then it's just talk. And dream, aspire and grumble as much as we like, the crucial way we make a difference in these areas, the way we shake up the systems that oppress, the way we change the kind of world in which these things, poverty, oppression, exploitation, injustice, are acceptable, change it into a different kind of world, for these things are unacceptable, is through political engagement. The thread that reminds us that our religion has to be more than theoretical runs right through the Bible. The Old Testament prophets are particularly vehement that this is how our faith is expressed. Amos, The Lord says, I hate your religious festivals. Let justice flow like a stream, and righteousness that never grows dry. Ezekiel thunders, but you have not taken care of the weak ones, healed those that are sick, bandaged those that wandered off. Instead, you treated them cruelly. Isaiah declares, just as a hunter fills his cage with birds, they have filled their houses with loot. That is why they are powerful and rich, why they are fat and well fed. They do not give their orphans their rights or show justice to the oppressed. The psalmist warns, all those injustices you perpetrate, all those loaded dice you play with that trap the poor in their misery, do you think I don't see that, says the Lord? Do you think I will forget what you did? Mary, in her Song of Revolution, makes it clear that the Messiah is coming to make a difference, the kind of difference that affects out there, not just makes us feel good in here. He has stretched out his mighty arm and scattered the proud with all their plans. He has brought down mighty kings from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things. Jesus assures his first listeners that he has come to bring good news to the poor. Not just so that they will cope with their poverty in the fine spirit of resignation, but that things will change in the world that is so loaded against them, and justice will be done on their behalf. James, in his letter, warns against the sheer hypocrisy of recognising need and then thinking a kind word and a pat on the back is going to be any good to anyone. He says, suppose there are brothers or sisters who need clothes and don't have enough to eat. What good is there and you're saying to them, keep warm, eat well, if you don't give them the necessities of life? It's like when the minister says, in our prayers this morning, let's think about all the people who are cold and hungry. No, let's not. Let's do something about it. Amos is concerned that although the Lord has made it clear what his desire is for his children, the people who should know best are taking refuge in some kind of pietistic escapism, allowing themselves to think that if they're performing the right religious rituals, then they're doing all they need to do. Meanwhile, the poor, the cold and the hungry are without comfort, trapped in a hopelessly unfair world that will not be made better by lots of nice prayers, but will be made better by people who care, who get involved with the issues that create the problems. And getting involved with the issues means political engagement. It means that the church can't just talk about spiritual things and leave changing the world to other people. If the Bible calls us in the name of our Christian faith to see that justice is done, we have to ask, well, what does that actually look like? Once you get beyond and behind the words, what in fact will a just society involve? If we're challenged to demonstrate, as Amos would have us understand, kindness and mercy, how will these ideals be expressed? How will we make actual these abstract ideals out there in the world we live in with its profound needs? How do we put flesh on the bare bones of idealism? Not through talking about it in vague terms, but through initiatives and actions and sleeves rolled up and money given and joining in solidarity with others who feel that concern with the same passion. Given that there is probably as much oppression of the vulnerable in our time as there has been since the Second World War, there is clearly work to be done to defend the weakest, support the fallen, lift the burdens from the exhausted. The church can neither keep silent about these things, nor stand helpless at the sidelines, kidding ourselves on that talking about it will be enough to change it. If we want a just, compassionate, welcoming, free world, then the amphitheatre in which that struggle takes place is the Colosseum of politics. And when our sleeves are rolled up, and we're getting our hands dirty, and when differences are being made, and the kind of country we're going to live in is being decided, then religion and politics are unavoidably and inextricably connected. The Bible makes it clear, painfully clear, it's the role of men and women of faith to speak truth to power, to challenge structures and systems that are weighted against the vulnerable and the poor. And in a world that is cockeyed and disjointed, it is the task of the church to hold up in prayer the people who move the levers, shake up the status quo, divide up the spoils of success, to ensure that fairness is in operation, that the most vulnerable are supported and sustained, and that the scales of justice, economic as well as legal, are not set in such a way as to favour the few. So when the church speaks out about new legislation, it does so without prejudice, save a prejudice on behalf of the fragile, the weak and the disadvantaged. And the politicians, the leaders, the powerful of the land do well to listen when men and women of faith speak about the kinds of issues that shape and define a nation. Those at the top, with the power to bring about change, do well to take account of those things the church does for them and for the common good. And when it speaks the truth and it prays for them, not just because St. Paul tells us to, but because it's the right thing to do, that practice of prayer sets the tone, the direction of travel, and establishes the solid foundations on which any social progress is going to be made. Look, we all want a quiet life. Life to go on without upheaval, unrest, ugly social disorder, our streets and cities not shamed by poverty, please, and its outcomes. We all want peace and plenty for ourselves, for our children, for the nations of the world. We feel the jarring shame of stick-thin children and bombed-out villages. Instinctively and by observation, we know this is not how it's meant to be in our world, in any world. All this long before we recognise that there are particular areas of overlap between the worlds of religion and politics. You see it all the time, an inextricable intertwining that cannot be disentangled. Not a day goes by, but that can be evidenced, positively and negatively. But certainly to such a degree and with such frequency that only someone who's really closing their mind could miss it. The Catholic Church has strong issues over abortion law. Many of the churches want serious questions asked about end-of-life issues, assisted dying. There are implications, ethics. France is abuzz with issues of what Muslim women can and cannot wear. The dangerous surge in anti-Semitism across Europe and the concerns that the Labour Party in the United Kingdom has been confusing criticism of the State of Israel with anti-Semitism. Issues of freedom of speech and how much anyone can express their own faith stance before it becomes offensive to someone else. Whether you can refuse to bake a cake promoting gay rights or not. The rise of extremism and religious ideologies that sometimes lie behind that extremism. Forced marriages, honour killings. All of these so-called religious issues spill over into political decision-making and the edges become blurred. So, in his heyday of power, Tony Blair might not do God, and George Bush might have thought of his Gulf War as a crusade, and Christianity may be under the hammer in Modi's India, and Pakistan may be crushing the indigenous church, Bibles may be illegal in the Middle East, Indonesia may ban Christmas. That's our world. We have skin in the game. Religion and politics are intertwined because they're both about people and how you treat them. They're both about the kind of world we want to live in. And neither of them, religion or politics, can hide from their responsibilities. It was Benjamin Franklin who claimed that he who shall introduce into public affairs the principles of primitive Christianity will revolutionise the world. He who shall introduce into public affairs the principles of primitive Christianity will revolutionise the world. King Charles III has pledged himself to uphold and promote the Christian values his mother did. And as his mother did, to preserve, in his words, the government, worship, discipline, rights and privileges of the Church of Scotland. So help me God. He, with all those in political power, he, with all those of influence, will need our prayers.